Okay, hi everybody. And I hope, let's see, I think we're more or less, a little too high. Okay. Right, we are continuing with basically the second stanza of the Great Invocations, and let the Lords of Liberation issue forth. It begins in that way. We've been dealing with the rider on the white horse, and that is one like as we are, and that is most probably the Christ fulfills that role. It is also associated in ancient Hindu mythology and religious texts with the Kalki avatar. So there's, let's see, maybe I think what we can do is look at this first phrase or first grouping within the second stanza. And I think just to refresh our minds, maybe we should go over the entirety of it, you know. Let the Lords of Liberation issue forth. Let them bring succor to the sons of men. Let the rider from the secret place come forth and coming save. Come forth, O Mighty One. It seems that the rider is the Mighty One in this case, but certainly the Lords of Liberation are still more mighty. Let the souls of men awaken to the light, and may they stand with massed intent. Let the fiat of the Lord go forth. The end of woe has come. Come forth, O Mighty One. The hour of service of the saving force has now arrived. Let it be spread abroad, O Mighty One. Let light and love and power and death fulfill the purpose of the coming one. The will to save is here. The love to carry forth the work is widely spread abroad. The active aid of all who know the truth is also here. Come forth, O Mighty One, and blend these three. Construct a great defending wall. The rule of evil now must end. I think we can all sense the incredible potency of this section of the invocation. Now we've made some progress, and we are in that section where the one who issues forth, well, at least the avatar who is the Christ, let the rider from the secret place come forth and coming save. All right, so we've actually done quite a bit here. And I'm doing what I can. Yes. Here we are. On what level of consciousness will he ride? Now that's a very interesting question because his coming forth is a coming forth in consciousness. And of course, it has been decided. Now it has been decided, maybe 5 years after this was written, that he would come forth on the physical plane. On what level of consciousness he will ride, he says, it is not for us to say. Okay, later it is said. It is possible that he will not appear upon the physical plane at all. Who can say? So the idea of Christ in the etheric or Christ upon the emotional plane, these ideas were being presented as possibilities. But the sound of his coming will be known, and speaking symbolically, the thunder of his horse's hooves will be heard. Now, his symbol is the thunder. Now, you know, the thunder, is the symbol of the second Ray Lord. So if we go to esoteric psychology, excuse me, volume one, and we look up the word thunder, we will find it. His symbol is the thunder and the word that cycles down the ages. This is in the discussion of the names of the second ray Lord and his particular stanza that occurs before the names. So the thunder of his horse's hooves. Now the horse, of course, is a sixth ray animal. The thunder is a symbol of the second ray and the great word. And the word is always the second ray. And interestingly, should this avatar be the Christ, and you know, more and more it seems exactly that that will be the case, his rays are given to us in the destiny of the nations as the second ray soul and the sixth ray personality. So the two rays are represented there in thunder and the horse and its hooves. The influence which he will wield and the energy which he will transmit from the Lords of Liberation will inevitably be potently felt, evoking an immediate response. So this is interesting, that the Lords of Liberation issue forth, let them bring succor to the sons of men, let the rider from the secret place come forth, transmitting the energy of the Lords of Liberation. So I want to make this a little bigger, you know, so it stands out. The rider from the secret place not only will carry the influence of the Lords of Liberation, but as later described, will carry the influence of the Avatar of Synthesis, the Spirit of Peace, and also the Buddha, whose vestures he is using. And by those vestures, I think we do mean the triadal vestures, and not the, not the personal vestures, which have disappeared long ago and been absorbed into the triad. So anyway, there will be an immediate human response. This will prove an incontrovertible fact, that his radiation will reach forth and surround his disciples struggling in the conflict with evil, is also certain and sure. Now this can even be, you know, during the war, and it's clear that those disciples who are in the new group of world servers and are playing the role of the group, John the Baptist, are also facing danger, though they are, as the Tibetan tells us, somewhere marked out for protection. So his radiation will reach forth and surround his disciples struggling in the conflict with evil. That this will happen is also certain and sure. This will enable them to make the supreme effort, which will win the battle for humanity. In other words, they will be just the way the Christ is coming and will be reinforced by these tremendous extraplanetary, but perhaps intra-solar systemic beings like the Avatar of Synthesis and the Spirit of Peace. Just as they support him, he will support his disciples, and that will enable them to make the supreme effort, which will win the battle for humanity. The battle is not over yet. There still is the fighting to the last ditch of these powers, as I've said, with incredible weaponry abroad in the world, and one nation begins to threaten another with the possibility of an arms race an arms race in the Middle East, a renewed arms race between Russia and the United States, and now China seeking increased military power can enter that as well. So we still are in the midst of the battle, though it has not precipitated, and hopefully will not, as the third phase of the Great World War. That he will come in the air is a well-known prophecy from the New Testament, thus enabling every eye to see him. These words have more meaning today than when written nearly 2,000 years ago, for his, and you know, nearly 2,000 years ago, right, because this was written in the 1940s, okay, for this world conflict is outstandingly an aerial one. Students and those using this invocation would be wise to bear this in mind, or they may fail to see and recognize the deliverer when he comes, a thing which has happened before. There was an anticipation, you know, that the Christ would appear before the end of the 20th century. It seems to be marked out in some of the earlier books, but later discussion in these books, I think this book particularly, delays that coming, and that's probably because of the presence of weapons of mass destruction, which did not exist when the earlier anticipation was discussed in some of the earlier books. And then, of course, we have to remember also, remember that the Buddhic plane is the plane of air. And he brings that Buddhic quality especially. Now, that's a more esoteric interpretation than the fact that he may simply step on an airplane and arrive, who knows, in a particular city. DK seems to give it even that kind of mundane possibility. Maybe he arrives in New York, let us say, and comes to the United Nations. Every eye shall see him. Will he be recognized? That is the question. But the prophecy is that he will be outwardly visible, and every eye, you know, tuned to the media and so forth, will see him. And will he stand out? Let's just say also that there's now the issue of delay, and with what has to happen regarding the five planetary centers, the disciples and initiates taking up their place in each of those planetary centers and surrounding the Master, who will be making his headquarters in such a planetary center, all of that is going to take time. Now, you know, we don't have the time equation, but the way things are moving now, especially, you know, with the idea that such an establishment of disciples and masters, disciples, initiates, and masters will be recognized by the governments of the time, that seems something that is not to be occurring immediately. Now we come now to the second stanza. You know, how does he use stanza? Sometimes the entire invocation is called a stanza. And the sentences are called phrases. I think what he means now is that we're dealing with the second invocation, and we're dealing with the second series of phrases in that second invocation, and we're calling that second series of phrases a stanza. Okay. We come now to the second stanza with its direct references to human attitudes and recognitions. For decades, I, as one of the spiritual teachers, along with many others, have sought to awaken all to the fact of light, capitalized. Light in the world, light coming from the plane of desire, called the astral plane quite often, light illuminating science and human knowledge, the light of the soul producing in due time the light in the head. All of this, you know, he says, we've been carefully schooled about this. Light is that which reveals, and we don't really see the light. We see that which the light reveals, and when we think we see light, as, let's say, a beam of light is seen, it's pretty much what it reveals along the way, the particles it reveals, and so forth. You have been carefully taught that the right use of the mind in meditation and reflection will lead to the correct relation of soul and personality, and that when this takes place, the light of the soul ignites or fosters the light in the head, and the man reaches the stage of illumination. So, you know, even at the second degree, we have mental illumination and spiritual intelligence, I think it says. So, the right use of the mind will lead to soul and personality coordination and a phenomenal light will break forth in the head, and he has described this in various places, the three or four forms which it might take, and whether it is diffuse or whether it is centralized or whether there is a point of indigo blue in the midst of it all, which indicates the finding of the path. See, in a way, that is anatomically and interiorly a path into higher perception. The reference in the second stanza is to the more extended idea of the relation of humanity, the kingdom of men, to the spiritual hierarchy, the kingdom of God. When these two are more closely aligned, related, and related, the light will break out among the sons of men as a whole, just as the light breaks out in the individual aspirant. So just so we can keep this before us, let the souls of men awaken to the light, and may they stand with massed intent. And again, that's the light with the capital L. Okay. So the idea here is that all the sons of men can awaken to the light. This much to be desired event can be brought about by the spiritually minded people in the world, by the men and women of goodwill, and by the world disciples standing with massed intent. And this means a uniform, united focus. So many people are animated by wishful thinking, by hoping, and by prayer. So few are motivated by intention. Okay, so standing with massed intent. There will be a light breaking forth. This is the idea, and this idea of standing with massed intent, a uniform, united focus. So let's take a look at that and make that a little bigger. Because that phrase is often used, standing with masked intent. Okay. So many people are animated by wishful thinking, by hoping, and by prayer. So few are motivated by intention. And intention here is that unbreakable, immovable determination that a situation shall be handled, that what is needed in order to release mankind assuredly must appear, for such is the mental intention of the focused minds of many. So I would ask you to give much thought to these words, masked intent, and to differentiate with care between intention and desire. Okay, well, I've been looking quite often for good definitions of masked intent, and here we have one. Not wishful thinking, not hoping, not prayer. Unbreakable, immovable determination that a situation shall be handled, that what is needed in order to release mankind assuredly must appear. So it has great confidence in it. It has great faith in it. When humanity has fulfilled these conditions through a focused mental demand based on correctly formulated masked intent, then will come the affirmation from the spiritual forces. So we have our role to play, and to play it in a certain way which uses the mind and the will, and not just the desire body, obviously. Okay. I'm just hoping my chronometer here will not fail me. You know, it always does, and I come up with strange durations for some of these programs. Okay, so let the souls of men awaken to the light, and may they stand with that mental, willful demand that expects certain conditions to be met and will go far to meet those conditions, or to make sure those conditions occur, because action will follow masked intent, and then there will be response. Let the fiat of the Lord go forth. Excuse me. So let me increase this a bit. Right. So let the fiat of the Lord go forth. The end of woe has come. This is the response. This is the evocation. Now he's speaking about the present situation at that time, of course. And if it really was considered by the hierarchy at that time to be the true Armageddon, it was serious in the greatest way. Now we also learn that before the judgment day, there will come a tremendous battle. It will not be taken place on the physical plane unless by reflection, and it has a lot to do with the mental plane. Of course, the way we look at that, it's got to be millions of years ahead, because it does not occur, as far as we can see, in this particular round. It seems the fifth round within our chain is involved. And that being the case, it is far ahead. So we're not on this planet rid of the brothers of darkness until this judgment day occurs, when three-fifths of our humanity, the three-fifths who are on either the beginning or much later phases of the path, are the only members of humanity present upon the planet. And you can imagine what will happen along the dividing line for those in relation to whom the question arises, will they stay or will they go? You know, I mean, initiates of the first, second, and beyond, there's no question about it. They will stay, but there are probably certain people that will be deciding whether they are really on the path or not, and it will be, I think, a very dramatic issue. Well, for everyone, but especially for those where planetary residence is being determined. The ending of the present evil situation is therefore a cooperative measure, meaning, of course, there's got to be the right kind of invocation so that evocation can occur. And here in this connection, we have the appearance of the Lord of Civilization who voices and engineers upon the physical plane the fiat of the Lord of Liberation and of the Rider from the secret place. Now notice that's a singular, a one particular Lord of Liberation. Not all of them. I guess one was particularly closer. Maybe the one who is associated with liberty and human freedom, because that seemed to be the issue. You cannot work out equality and fraternity unless there is a degree of freedom as a foundation. So, and in this case, that Lord of Civilization, ever since 1925 or so, is the Master Rokutsi. We have the appearance of the Lord of Civilization who voices and engineers upon the physical plane the fiat of the Lord of Liberation and of the Rider from the secret place. He aids and makes possible, owing to his control of the elements and all the lower forces, the precipitating upon earth and in the arena of combat of the power generated by the Lords of Liberation, expressed by the coming one and focused through him as the hierarchical representative in Europe. And of course, he's also the regent of the United States as well as the regent of Europe. Now, this is 2019 and the European Union seems threatened in some ways, and we have to wonder what he's thinking about that and what he's doing about that. So he makes possible the precipitating upon the earth and in the arena of combat of the power generated. It looks here like it's generated by all the Lords of Liberation, expressed by the Christ, the coming one in this instance, and focus through him, namely that Lord of Civilization as the hierarchical representative in Europe. So, from the Lords of Liberation to the Christ to the Lord of Civilization and into the fray in Europe, especially because that's where the war was taking place at the time. We do really see how these higher alignments occur and how these greater beings do everything they can within the limits of the law to see to the success of humanity, at least to prevent the falling of humanity into a state which could not be further advanced and would have to be, it would have to be attempted again, a beginning again attempted. The work of the Master R has always been recognized as of a peculiar nature and as concerned with the problems of civilization, just as the work of the Christ, the Master of all Masters, is concerned with the spiritual development of humanity and the work of the man who is occupied with the science of divine government with politics and law, that thereby linking the Manu with the fifth ray as well as with the first. And, you know, I think sometimes it pays to go to a certain, maybe I can find it. It would be here. And these would be the diagrams. Yes. AAB diagrams. And the view. Where's my view? There it is. Okay, and that would be details. And the view would be here when looking at the hierarchy. Hopefully this is it, and we would notice who's connected to who. Well, obviously, there's got to be some kind of connection between the Manu and the Lord of Civilization, and there is indeed. The three great lords are all connected. So that's the connection with the fifth ray, and we do also see the Manu with the red lines going forth. They touch the Master Hilarion on the fifth ray, and the seventh ray Chohan, whatever his name is now, on the seventh ray. So this is a valuable chart to show lines of cooperation. Lines of cooperation. Okay, now, where are we? So this is interesting, the divine science of divine government. So with the Christ, it is spiritual development, although the word spiritual has a lot more meaning than as simply related to the church. Whatever uplifts humanity really is spiritual, and this is the science of divine government with politics and law. And this is when it comes to the Master R, it's the problems of civilization being worked out on the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh rays. The third ray, the last of the rays of aspect and all the rays of attribute. Thus, the incoming focused energy called forth in response to right invocation is stepped down nearer to humanity. We might say through the agency of Master R. TH belongs there. And the masses can then respond to the new impulses. So what do we have? We have the Lords of Liberation reached by the advanced spiritual thinkers of the world whose minds are rightly focused. No, notice how this is a mental importunity with the aspect of will keenly involved. The rider on the white horse, or from the secret place reached by those whose hearts are rightly touched. And this, of course, can include the spiritual thinkers, because many have blended heart and mind. And then the Lord of Civilization, Master R, reached by all who, with the first two groups, can stand with that kind of focus that we talked about, can stand with massed intent. Massed intent, that undeviating focus with all the powers of what we consider to be the higher will behind it. So if I was to look that up again, maybe we would find that here. Let's just see. Or have we gone way, way back to the beginning? Yeah, unbreakable, immovable determination that a situation shall be handled. And that what is needed in order to release mankind surely must appear, for such is the mental intention of the focused minds of many who can truly think. So this is one of the meanings of masked intent, and we have to differentiate it from desire. Okay. I think that many people don't realize how much the mind and the will has to be involved in this type of invocation. It's not just an imploring, a desiring, a longing, an aspiring, not just those necessary factors, yes, but something more, and we should question ourselves as we invoke alone or with our group, do we have that something more? On the united work of these three, if humanity can succeed in calling them forth, will come the alignment and the correct relation of three spiritual centers of the planet, a thing which has never occurred before. So, and by that, he means the Manu, the Christ, and the Maha Chohan. And it'd be nice if I could. Oh, okay. So there we are. And I'll make this that color. Fighting with my cursor that wants to jump all over the place, All right. So who are these three? These three, the Manu, the Christ, and the Maha Chohan, each receiving from the Lords of Liberation. And here is the method, the descent of the energy needed. The Lords of Liberation will receive and transmit to the hierarchy energy from the center where the will of God is known and furthered. The rider will receive this energy and take such actions as will express it, plus the motivating energy from the center where God's love is expressed. The Lord of Civilization will stimulate and prepare the center, which we call humanity, for right reception of this revitalizing, stimulating, and releasing force. So, let's just say that there will come from these three a okay, revitalizing, stimulating, and releasing force, directed, that is, towards a certain end. Now, we've all seen those pictures of the interacting Shambhala hierarchy and humanity. It's not yet a complete interflow, but it's getting closer all the time. The will of God, the love of God, and the intelligence of God will thus fuse and blend on earth and in relation to human problems. That's what it will take to solve them. Intelligence alone is not enough. Love alone is not enough. Even will is not enough without expression through love and intelligence. All three, all three are required. Conditions will consequently be brought about, and energies will be set in motion, which will end the rule of evil and bring war to an end through the victory of the forces of light, recognized and aided by humanity. I'm thinking about, you know, the turning after Stalingrad and the D-Day invasion, when the Allies came to the shores of France and landed at the Normandy, in the beaches of Normandy. This was the response to the attempt to fight a two-front war that Germany initiated. Well, as DK said, you know, the Germans have that Piscean personality, and they're very vulnerable. They were very vulnerable to obsession. And that's what happened. This synthesis of the three energies, evoked through invocation and the response of certain divine potencies, is esoterically the name given to the saving force. The hour, how does it say, the hour of service of the saving force has now arrived. Let it be spread abroad, O mighty one. So this synthesis of the three energies, evoked through invocation and the response of certain divine potencies, I suppose, you know, from the Lords of Liberation, etc., is esoterically given the name the saving force. Let's just say, not just the force of the three great lords, but of the Lords of Liberation as well. Of its exact nature and intended effects, we know practically nothing. It has never before appeared in action on the physical plane, though it has been for some time active upon the mental plane. This is interesting. So it's released for the first time in this kind of Armageddon or decisive battle that determined whether the representatives of the Black Lodge would rule or whether the representatives of hierarchy would have a chance to create the kind of humanity that has been foreseen, and whether correct entry into the Aquarian Age would occur. So it has never before appeared in action on the physical plane, though, you know, has been known, let us say. So the saving force, you know, I just, it's big as it is, but there it is, and it needs to be accented. Through it, though it is a blend of the energies of the three centers referred to above, and should we say as fed by the Lords of Liberation, it is primarily the energy of the divine will, which will be its outstanding characteristic. So that is the key, the Chambala, really has the lion's share of the effective quality of the saving force. One hint I will give, just as the externalization of the materialistic lodge of seven men, to which I made reference above, has made its appearance and must be dealt with prior to the future externalization of the lodge of spiritual lives, that is, the appearance of the kingdom of God on earth, which we call the planetary hierarchy, so the will to power of the forces of aggression has appeared on earth and sought to gain control over humanity. Note that aim. So it was a far more occult, esoteric formulation, this group of seven, than we ordinarily might think. Those who are occultly inclined and learn about these things find it to be reasonable, and others would never see the point. But the externalization of the materialistic lodge has to be swept aside before the future externalization of the lodge of spiritual lives, a representative, I suppose, from each ashram, has to be, can appear. Okay. So, and must be dealt with. Yes. That group must be scattered, and it was scattered, and the principals either committed suicide or they were hanged. So we note the aim. So the will to power of the forces of aggression has appeared on earth and sought to gain control over humanity. And you can still feel their machinations as they attempt to divide and conquer. So many good relationships which have been put together and which would go a long way towards guaranteeing the peace within humanity have been recently disrupted or challenged or set aside by these Martian forces, a force which divides, cuts, separates. Okay, friends, I've been, the Pisces energy, I've been talking ahead and I've been on pause. So, that gives me a chance to correct this, at least. It's the D-Day invasion. And I'll go back, and if I've, if you find me repeating a little bit, then please forgive me for that. This synthesis of the three energies invoked through invocation and the response of certain divine potencies. So let's just say, you know, the three energies are that of Shambhala hierarchy and humanity. So the three great lords are involved there, backed by the lords of liberation. And together, this sixfold potency is the saving force. So this, that's too much. This sixfold potency is the saving force. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's a six-pointed star with some being in the center, maybe Sanat Kumara. So this is six pointed star with perhaps an Akamara in the very center. So it's not just the three great lords, but the lords of liberation as well, and probably the great lord of Shambhala, because he is the highest example of the saving force upon our planet. So we don't know, DK is saying, it's totally, we don't know its exact nature and intended effects. It is shambolic in nature, and because of that, one would have to be a Chohan or beyond to know that. And this is interesting, it has never before appeared in action on the physical plane, though it has been, let's say, thought of on the mental plane and been received on the mental plane, but never applied per se until this time. So we know how necessary it is, because now, you know, within this past century was the great attempt to destroy humanity. We don't, maybe another attempt will come, but we don't know that for certain. So it is a blend of the energies of the three centers above, as fed by the lords of liberation, and it's primarily the energy of divine will, which is its outstanding characteristic. So that's kind of a justification for Sanat Kumara being at the very center of these six potencies. Just as the externalization of the materialistic lodge of seven men, to which I made reference above, has made its appearance and must be dealt with, eradicated, swept aside, etc., prior to the future externalization of the lodge of spiritual lives, which we call the kingdom of God on earth, you know, so representatives of the seven ashrams will be present, even though at the moment the major ashrams involved in the externalization are the first, the second, and the fifth, but others will be involved. The sixth is withdrawing until a later time, I suppose, though the sixth ray remains present because it's so necessary to inspire. And we are still in a 21,000-year sixth ray cycle, part of a 40,000-year plus fourth ray cycle. So you see how involved all that can get. So just as all of this is the case, so the will to power of the forces of aggression has appeared on Earth and sought to gain control over humanity. Sought to gain control. And that's the whole thing. The enslavement of humanity is their main goal. And you saw in the way, or the Axis powers treated those they conquered as slaves. Exceedingly brutal and self-justified, because they were some kind of superior group, and to treat with contempt hatred and a total disrespect those they conquered. This was also found in Japan, maybe even more brutally than was the case of those conquered by the Germans. That's a very sad story, that whole invasion of China and how the Chinese were treated. Now, obviously, there's been a lot of karma paid in Japan, but we don't know whether it's over, and there's some kind of karma involving radiation, because it is so strange that the atomic bomb was dropped in Japan, and then years later, now we have other catastrophes that involve radiation, the Fukushima tidal wave, and so forth. We have Edgar Casey has things to say about that. We don't know whether he will be correct or not, but he doesn't necessarily hold out a great future for Japan, though I think that may be exaggerated. Still, karma is coming home in that area of the world. But there has been a turn towards the good. And we are also told that although soul rays of nations do not change, at least frequently, maybe they can change, personality rays do change more often. And maybe there has been a change in the personality ray of Japan. It used to be the sixth ray, and one begins to wonder now whether the seventh ray has not come in very strongly. But, you know, I'll have to leave that just as speculation until there is more knowledge. What I'm trying to do right now is kind of make up for the fact that I don't know for how long, I hope not too long, that I had the pause button on. These are the technicalities which can drive one a little crazy as one is trying to provide this material. You get into it and you try to think about it, and then you look over here and some kind of technical matter is going on. I guess this is the result of trying to be one's own engineer. There must be a better way. Okay. So this will to power, to enslavement, to the appropriation of all the wealth of other nations, it is a kind of rapacious greed of the unspiritualized personality, especially the strong ones. This will to power can only be dissipated when the highest aspect of the same energy is given free rein among the sons of men. And what would I call that? The will to good, probably. So the shambolic will, as the will to good, must be released through humanity. The divine spiritual will, carried on the impulse of selfless love, and that's the point. Something that the Black Lodge and its representatives will never have. They are blind when it comes to selfless love. Canon must be evoked for the destruction of the selfish and wicked will to power rampant now on earth under the direction of the Focus 7. Notice they are focused in Germany. And I think I mentioned that that place of endless death we talk about is on page 754 of of the Rays and the Initiations, a place of endless death, probably the dense physical body of the planetary logos, though they can reach along unsanctioned lines onto the cosmic planes. They can do that, okay? But they have as their characteristic wicked pride and hateful lust. Those themselves are ugly words, and that's what they bring to humanity. Wicked pride, because they are brothers of unique blindness. They look at themselves and they think they're something great, and hateful lust, and they will run rampant over others, appropriating, grabbing what they want. So this higher type of will, the divine and spiritual will, must be evoked to, you know, in a way, fight fire with fire, for the destruction of the selfish and wicked will to power rampant now. Canon must be evoked. And indeed, I think the Allies began to respond in that way. Now we have to wonder whether we have forgotten the battle. You know, there is this question about whether peace makes people soft and forgetful, and whether we have forgotten the tremendous sacrifices that were offered in the second part of the Great War, which apparently DK is calling the Armageddon. And Every once in a while, humanity has to be reminded of what others have given, or maybe earlier aspects of themselves, although such people, being participants in an earlier aspect of their presently incarnated self, would be more tending to remember. I sometimes wonder, who are these neo-Nazis and fascists and skinheads and people who look at white supremacy as their God-given right and hate the other races? Who are they? And have they learned any lesson? Have they learned any lesson before? Or are they thus far the unredeemed ones? So the saving force must be spread abroad. And even now, our responsibility is to spread it abroad as wisely and widely as we can, through the distribution of the ageless wisdom and the reorientation of people towards the three great lords, and the reorientation or fast orientation of the disciples and initiates towards the lords of liberation. There's still much to be worked out with respect to them. Liberty is not complete. It has, however, struck its note, and there is more liberty now. There is not yet the enslavement of humanity, but there are places where human beings are indeed enslaved. Equality has to be understood, because obviously there is no equality in manifestation, but only in origin and potential. And that's, unless one is an esotericist, one does not have that picture. And fraternity, true brotherhood, no, not yet. Not until, I don't know, maybe until we find some kind of monadic equality, will it be understood that all human beings are indeed brothers, sisters to each other in their final identity. So there are many things to be worked out during the Age of Aquarius under the air signs and the particular lords of liberation that are identified with the various air signs. Liberty, Aquarius; equality, Libra; fraternity, Gemini. Today, the need is for the spread of the saving force to take hold of our minds and to control from that directing center, for it embodies the needed salvation at this time. The hierarchy is more in touch with humanity, and it is the center, but there are Shambhala impacts. It will take the united efforts of all the three focal points of divine expression on our planet to make this possible, but it can be done. So we are more and more getting the interplay between hierarchy and humanity, between Shambhala and hierarchy, and even between Shambhala and humanity. That is coming through the various Shambhala impacts, and eventually there will be the total desired interplay between these three planetary centers, as fed by greater, or stimulated by still greater forces that have come to our planet to help our planet. Now, all of this, seems like the merest fantasy and fancy to so many people. Where do you get this stuff? Oh, some Tibetan monk wrote this. Well, you know what to think of religion, etc., etc. How can you believe any of that? But, through the reading of the Tibetan and through the meditations that he offers, and trying to see things as an outpost of his consciousness, we develop a deep trust in the Tibetan as the messenger. And we also develop a deep trust in the integrity of Alice Bailey, who took down what he said the very best she could and was corrected where correction was needed. Is it a leap of faith? Well, it has to seem reasonable to the believer, and even more reasonable to the ones who are totally committed to seeing these assertions as very reasonable hypotheses. And after a while, the intuition strikes, and one simply knows that it is so. Now, let's see if I can do a little bit more of this. What will come out, of course, will not be a program of an agreeable length. It will be like whatever. So I apologize ahead of time. And I think I cannot finish this second invocation in this particular program. There's too much, but maybe a little more in the final stanzas, which we need not take phrase by phrase, as their significance is sufficiently clear. We have plainly put before us the methods whereby humanity can play its part and do its share in aiding all those who are cooperating with the forces of light to bring this planetary war to an end. And as I said, internally, the planetary war is not really over. So the final group of phrases, let light and love and power and death fulfill the purpose of the coming one. All of this is, the following is clear. The will to save is here. The love to carry forth the work is widely spread abroad, is sufficient. The active aid, the ray of activity of all who know the truth is also here. Remember, the good, the beautiful, and the true, ray one, ray two, ray three. The true is associated particularly with ray three. The active aid of all who know the truth is also here. Come forth, O mighty one, and blend these three. This is, the invocation to the one who can come forth, and that is the Christ. The rule of evil now must end. Come forth, O mighty one. Let the rider from the secret place come forth. The lords of liberation issue forth. Is there a difference between issuing forth and coming forth? Certainly, the connection with the Christ is more immediate for the great majority of humanity than can possibly be the case in relation to the lords of liberation. Okay. So, a little more. Look at for a moment at the four words which embody the thought of what can be done by men to bring to fruition the mission of the coming one, the rider from the secret place. He does remind us of who that is, lest we be confused. Is it that the lords of liberation, in a way, can descend no lower than the mental plane, maybe that is the case. We are told that light and love and power and death must be invoked to fulfill the purpose of the coming one. And that purpose is certainly the purpose of Sanat Kumara. In the Garden of Gethsemane, the Christ saw something. He could see ahead thousands of years, and he saw the need to acquiesce to the divine will. We are told that light and love and power and death must be invoked, all of them, to fulfill the purpose of the coming one. Here we come right down to the practical theme of man's individual part in the process of liberation. And here we are concerned with that which within humanity itself needs evocation in order to produce right cooperation, right preparation, right understanding. So we have a lot of work to do with the people who may, they may not be specifically interested in occultism in a technical sense, but there's ways to reach them so that these potencies of light, love, power, and an understanding of the death process can stimulate their thinking and reorient them towards the spiritual values and their higher spiritual possibilities. Four potencies within the soul of man are available for his individual use in helping the forces of light, potencies he shares with all men to a greater or lesser degree, according to the expressive power of the soul. Now, he's even looking at death as a potency. It's interesting. Certainly, when he talks about the eternally lovely secret of death, it gives everyone a pause, because death has been that which has been feared, maybe ever since the inner connection with the higher worlds has been lost, either in late Atlantean times or early Aryan times, lost for many. And the Black Lodge did all it could to instill the fear of death in human beings, and they succeeded. So these potencies, of which death is one, they are potencies which are not innate in the lower self, light, love, and power, and death, but only in the higher. The lower self reflects only the distorted forms of the higher divine energies. Okay, so we cannot look to the personality for the evocation of these potencies, which are so necessary to bring all of this, the banishing of evil, to a successful conclusion. This is a point to be carefully noted. Of light and love, I can say but little to you. To esoteric students, these words are so familiar as to be somewhat meaningless. Well, you know how we all sign our letters. Well, light and love, you know. And if we add power to it, you know, sometimes there's a reaction to that. But okay, we have to watch out that we don't just through over-familiarity lose the real understanding. I think, you know, that when true illumination strikes, when true love is felt, then we are amazed that we've had a superficial view of these profound potencies. To esoteric students, these words are so familiar as to be somewhat meaningless, and only those who can walk in the light and whose major reaction is love of humanity will comprehend the significance of the interrelation of these four words. Every one of us, I suppose, should ask, do we really understand the interrelation of these four words, you know, and why death? Why should death be included as well? But there has to be, you know, the death of that which kills consciousness, the death of the enslaving forces. Light with which to see the new vision is needed by all. This will probably not be an intensification of any earlier vision, no matter how apparently spiritual, but something so entirely new that you will need all the light that is in you and a trained insight if you are to recognize it when contacted. You know the old saying here, in that light we shall see light, a greater light. And sometimes I think that's the Buddhic light of intuition, in the focused light of the mind, when sufficiently intense, the Buddhic light appears. Actually, light is matter, and light exists as the coming forth of the absolute into self-objectification. That light with which to see the new vision, and not what we expect. If it's new, it's not what we expect. So, okay, not an intensification of an earlier vision, but something shockingly new, and we will need to use the light that we already have, if we are to recognize it. So, it's not that we can dispense with that which we already have, but in that light, we shall see light. Love, which is not emotion or sentiment, and which is not related to feeling, which is a distortion of true love, but is the fixed determination to do what is best for the whole of humanity or for the group. If the larger concept is not possible to you, that is humanity, and to do this at any personal cost and by means of the uttermost sacrifice. Wow. That is quite a definition of love. I think if we assembled these definitions of love, we would be hit by a great presentation. So this is a true definition of love. Okay, but is a fixed determination. Look at how will gets in there. To do what is best for the whole of humanity. Think of that. Do we have that in mind when we make our decisions about what is good and so forth, or what is not? Fixed determination to do what is best for the whole of humanity or for the group, if the larger concept is not possible to you, i.e. humanity, and to do this at any personal cost. Now there we see the motive of the Christ coming in, and by means of the uttermost sacrifice, of which he is the great example. Only those who truly love their fellow men can see the issues clear and can grasp the inevitability of the things which must be done to end the present rule of terror, and so usher in the new world of peace. Peace is not the goal for the race or for our race or time, no matter what many men think. This is a cycle of steadily growing activity with the aim in view of establishing right human relations intelligently carried forward. Such activity and intense change is not consonant with what is usually understood as peace. Wow. I mean, I'm just delighted by these definitions, which really clarify things for us, don't they? I mean, do they not? So peace is not the goal. No. Peace has relation to the emotional side of life and was the goal in Atlantean days, where peace was a great spiritual issue. But peace and the love of peace can be a deadening soporific, and so at this time, and are so at this time. It is usually selfish in purpose, and people long for peace because they want to be happy. Happiness and peace will come when there are right human relations. Peace and war are not a true pair of opposites. Peace and change, peace and movement are the real ones. War is but an aspect of change and has its roots deep in matter. The peace usually desired and discussed concerns material peace, and in every case is related to the personality, whether it is the individual personality or that of the of humanity as a whole. Therefore, I deal not with peace, but am concerned with love, which often disturbs the equilibrium of matter and material circumstance, and can consequently work against, you know, so-called peace, how we usually conceive of peace. This is a superb distinction here about what is peace and what is love. Okay, there follows a very important discussion of peace, war, love, and change. If we could only remember and call to our conscious attention as need arises these definitions, so as to know what the Tibetan thinks and what the wisdom tells at any moment of importance in our lives, moments of decision and so forth. Thinking of the whole of humanity and of the good of the group, we all have a lot to learn, I'm sure, in that respect. So I just have to end the present rule of terror. Only those who truly love their fellow man can see the issues clear and grasp the inevitability of the things which must be done to end this rule of terror and usher in the true peace. And then he elaborates on peace, and it really is worth considering again. Peace is not the goal of our race or time, no matter what many men think. This is a cycle of steadily growing activity, because Aquarius is a great sign of motion and mutability, with the aim in view of establishing right human relations intelligently carried forward. So this is that kind of time, and not a time of changelessness or static conditions, which are soporific in nature. Such activity and intense change is not consonant with what is usually understood as peace. That's the issue. It's not really peace. Although Shambhala is the center of pure and perfect peace, but what's going on in Shambhala, you see, is that you can't really measure it against the soporific state of emotionally reassuring changelessness that many people confuse here with peace. Peace has relation to the emotional side of life and was the goal in Atlantean days, where peace was a great spiritual issue because, you know, the fourth root ray is conflict all the time, and the sixth ray of contrasting values and so forth. But peace and the love of peace can be a deadening soporific, and are so at this time. In other words, let's not change. Let's have peace and no change, because change might be uncomfortable to the personality. This kind of definition of peace is usually selfish in purpose, and people long for peace because they want to be happy. All right, that's of the personality, joy of the soul, bliss of the spirit. Happiness and peace will come when there are right human relations. And that's another one of those really important statements. You know, let's absorb this. Peace and war are not a true pair of opposites. Peace and change, peace and movement are the real ones. In the old definition of peace, let's say. War is but an aspect of change and has its roots deep in matter. That's actually an interesting statement. And, the throwing off of the tamasic aspect can be looked at as war. The peace usually desired and discussed concerns material peace, and in every case is related to the personality, whether it is the individual personality or that of humanity as a whole. So, you know, please spare the personality of humanity as a whole, you know, and its settled condition, which doesn't like the friction of change. Therefore, I deal not with peace, but am concerned with love, which oft disturbs the equilibrium of matter and material circumstance. So peace and love and peace, true peace, can fit together, but only if it's true peace. Love and so-called peace are quite contrasting and can consequently work against so-called peace. Love works against so-called peace. Power is something which has ever been of interest down the ages to advance humanity and to those men who could respond to the will aspect through their mental unfoldment, because through the mind the will can come. It is today becoming of interest to the masses and to the more mediocre types of men, and is hence often misused and turned to selfish purpose. That is always the danger, unless the love aspect is activated. The power here to be evoked out of the human soul in this hour of need is the ability to know the plan and to work for its furtherance, thus cooperating with those forces which are endeavoring to reestablish order on earth and to end the cycle of aggressive wickedness in which today we find ourselves. So power is something other, once again, than we think of it, than the manner in which we think of it. Okay. It has to be related to the divine plan. So let's see what I can do here. I'm going to put it in a different color. I use these colors for contrast so that we can see some important sections and are not just reading, reading, reading. The power to be here evoked, here to be evoked out of the human soul in this hour of need is the ability to know the plan and work for its furtherance. And work for its furtherance. Okay. I guess that will have to be it. That is the power. Thus cooperating with those forces which are endeavoring to reestablish order on Earth. You know, he says there's been no true stability in the orientation of the axis or in astrology since Egyptian times. And so we've been passing through a very unstable time planetarily. And this is part of that instability. So restoring order on Earth and to end the cycle of aggressive wickedness. Now, doesn't that sound like Mars in which we today find ourselves? Okay. Mars. Interesting how that Mars-Venus conjunction worked out in Hitler's chart. I suppose with, he was an artist in a way, but he had Mars dominating, and gradually he took charge of the battlefield and began to micromanage everything, and the generals had to listen to him, although they knew better. So I think we have reached a point where, you know, hopefully there's no silent moments. Where you see me pantomiming. Whoa. All right, let's just see what this looks like. It looks like I have been, my audio connection is lost. Well, I can only hope that now it's been restored. So let's just see what that means for this type of recording. I'd like to know that. So here we are at the, we're on page 272, and, I think we got as far as 280, something like that. And I'll find out in a minute whether I'm correct or not as I transpose this to a place farther down the road. I don't know, I find it exciting to read this material because it seems to shed so much light on fundamental things, you know. And I don't feel at all trapped by the idea that this was written 80 years ago, or 75 years ago, something like that. So that's okay, no. It is, in fact, 278. That's really as far as we got. So it's just basically six pages. Okay. So it's 272 to 278. And that little underlined H doesn't belong. So this is program 27, right? And I don't know how long it is. I think it's 1.x hours. And it's 272 to 278. And we'll begin with this. And we don't know how many hours the next one will be, and we'll start at 278, and here, and this is the 21st, okay, and the date that we'll start this again is XX, and That'll be it. So I've got to return to the top and put in 278 instead of 280 because 280 is not correct. Okay. So 278. So really only 6 pages that we've done. But we are making progress. There is, we've done about 220 pages. And of course it can't possibly be done before the before we reach the conference. Not going to be possible. And I'm not sure how long this is, 1.x hours, because my chronometer fooled me again. It won. If only I could win over my own chronometer, I would be really, really happy about that. Okay. So, every eye shall see him, etc., etc. And we come down to page 278. Now, it'll be a big surprise to me to see whether there are silent moments, pantomime moments, but you know, they shouldn't go on too long. And if you run into pantomime moments, I'll put it in red, you know. You know, this is, how professional is this? Okay, what can I say? Not entirely the way it should be, but then we're racing with time here. So if you run into pantomime moments, keep going, and shortly, you will hear the voice again. All right. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. And thank you, everybody. And let's study. Let's try to be outposts in as much as we can for the Tibetan's consciousness. Of course, we can't, you know, you can't pour a gallon of water into a tiny little glass. So, but as much as we can, you know, let's expand the scope of the glass, and more of the Tibetan's perspective can come into our consciousness. And we will see and understand more and be able to help more effectively. Okay, we'll see you soon, and all the best, many blessings, lots of love, study hard, apply, do all those nice things I'd like to do too, and there will be success in service.